Welcome back, everybody, Inside Texas Baseball. I'm your host, Evan Veith, as always, joined by Nash Talks Texas, here in a different setting, talking on a Friday this morning, doing an advanced stats preview of the Texas versus Texas A&M series. Before we get into that, we have some awesome deals to talk to y'all about. Of course, the spring practice sale is still chugging, still moving along. $1 for 4 months to get you inside Texas. Some of the best content you're going to find around everything Texas sports related or just college sports in general. The draft just happened last night. Had a lot of good articles already about Jahdae Barron, Calvin Banks, and Matthew Golden. Texas baseball, of course, we get you breaking news about the Jared Spencer injury and just leading up to this game. And basketball is still active in the portal. So join Inside Texas today, $1 for the next 4 months of viewing. And we have an awesome gig going on today at 3 p.m. starting then. Behind the center field, kind of near the tennis courts, close to Kamal Street here at the U of C Dish Falk Field. Inside Texas has the best tailgate you're going to find for this Texas A&M series. You can win a Blackstone Omnivore griddle, a Yeti hard cooler, a Texas flag canopy, two folding chairs, and two tumblers. No purchase necessary to enter or win. One entry per person must be present to claim the prize. It is just the best you're going to get in all of Academy's giveaways. And I'm so excited to meet all of y'all. I know Matt Nash is going to be there. A lot of the Inside Texas family is going to be around for this awesome tailgate giveaway. As we transition into this, Nash, this A&M breakdown, firstly, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good, man. It's a little bit earlier than we record these things.
So the Aggies, slow start to the season, but really getting into it. And we've got a lot of great graphics to show y'all. But just what's been the story of this A&M team to start the year? And how have we gotten to where we're at this point in the year?
Yeah, I mean, so obviously, like you just mentioned, the Aggies, they were the number one team in the nation. They kind of started to slump off, but man, boy, have they really started to pick it up here. The Aggies they're scorching hot right now, heading into this matchup versus Texas. As you can see right here, Jace LaViolette, 5 home runs in the last 6 games. Dude's on fire. Caden Kent, it's multi-hit game, one after another. Caden Sorrell, ever since he's gotten back, all he's done is just shown, hey, you know what? Yeah, I am one of the top players in college baseball. I always was.
Pretty much. Yeah.
But I just wasn't playing for a little bit. And then even more, the one that really just stands out to me is in the last 11 games, they have 2.73 home runs per game. They've almost tied the amount. So the first 29 games, they hit 40 home runs. And then the last 11, they hit 30. They've almost tied their season output so far. You can also look at runs, all sort whatever, nearly any stat that you want. If it's a stat that scores runs, they're probably doing it at a larger pace than they were going into the last 11 game stretch.
Well, part of it is what started this team as the number one team heading into the year is you had all these returning guys. LaViolette, a potential number one overall pick in this next year's draft. Players like Sorrell and Kent. It's the formula is working again for head coach Michael Early that, you know, LaViolette, who's supposed to be the best hitter in college baseball, started to hit like the best hitter in college baseball. Caden Kent, who's been moved over into a bigger role this season, full-time shortstop, been an amazing hitter. Caden Sorrell's healthy. He's been awesome when he's been up at the plate. So it just feels like this team who's had some key additions, but really the guys, the formula that was being made before the season to be the number one teams is finally kind of coming into effect, you'd say.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like I said on the Monday show that we did. A&M, if you'd fallen into a coma and you woke up, you should start watching the last 10 games. You'd be like, yeah, this is the number one team in the nation, right?
No. Yep. That's a good way to put it. And we can pull up the hitting streaks that they are on right now because they're apart from the very top for Texas, you're seeing A&M just crowding up the stat sheet. Of course, LaViolette and Sorrell we've talked about. But Wyatt Hensler, who's an Ivy League transfer, third base guy, Binderup, who's just a promoted kind of redshirt sophomore freshman player, and Terrence Keel, their star freshman outfielder. It's just a lot of guys who are getting on base at a really high clip. And I know players like Tommy Farmer for Texas are on base a lot, but A&M's really putting the bat to the ball and getting on base with power throughout this streak. And it's been the last, 9 games. They've won 7 of them in SEC play. They've beaten Arkansas. They've beaten Tennessee, 2 of the top probably 3 or 4 teams in the SEC this season. This hitting approach, do you think it's been different from a coaching standpoint? Do you think it's just a confidence thing? Why do you think it's been so recent that all these hitters are really starting to kind of heat up together and at the same time?
I mean, it was always going to find its way back to consistency and, you know, some normalcy. One of the things that stands out to me when you're looking at this is at number five over there, Blake Bindrup. He's kind of your local College Station kid. He's been there. He went to College Station High School. Man, early in the year, late in the year, he's been playing first base for them a lot. Mm-hmm. Gavin Cash is the guy that you really would have penciled in for the first base spot. And it just really hasn't worked out for Gavin Cash. He hasn't been hitting the ball well. He hasn't been hitting the ball consistently. And you got a guy like Bindrup who, you know, kind of is stepping into that role. So kind of very similar to what we've seen with this Texas team. It's taken a lot of molding, and, you know, they've had to battle to find their optimal roster.
Yeah, they've really, especially one of the things that you look at throughout the year is how much they've changed a lot of their positions, even just year over year, talking about who was playing first last year compared to this year. But a good point on Cash, a former Longhorn. I know a lot of people have seen the graphics on Twitter about, you know, here's Jim Schlossen in an A&M hat, here's Gavin Cash in a Longhorn hat. And you would have thought that after a fantastic season last season, a pure power lefty bat, that he would be able to kind of step in and be the next big time hitter, the next maybe Brayden Montgomery for this outfield or first base here in College Station. But it really hasn't been, and you're right, Bindrup's been a guy who's truly kind of taken up the reins as the next good power hitter for this Aggie team. Real important position for them is this first base spot, because the infield defense has been good, but I think Bindrup's been a good reason for that. I think he's been one of the more solid spots there, and not a guy who was starting last year, really promoted his way into the starting lineup. So he's been one of the happy surprises, something that you might have thought would be a problem that Cash isn't playing, but Bindrup's been one of the better hitters this year.
Just consistency. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like he's not gonna have the wow factor that you might have from a Gavin Cash, but he gets on base.
He gets on base, Moneyball. I keep getting Moneyball clips all over.
We're going to get a Moneyball reference every week.
Of course. And going over to the Texas side of things, because, of course, we've got both of them on the graphic. It is pretty encouraging to see where Jalen Flores is at in this. Now, Flores has a knack for his 1-for-4 days, but the 1-for-4, 11 straight days is a hitting streak, and it seems like all these times it's a home run or a double. In the most important spot, he's Mr. Clutch for this Texas team right now. The Grand Slam on Tuesday, which Texas did beat Texas State. We talked about it on Monday. They didn't get it done. Flores has been on a tear power-wise and in the clutch, but Galvan is hitting the cover off the ball. Schuessler's doing the same. I've always been a big Casey Borba fan, and though it's a smaller streak, still getting on base and hitting for power as well. This is a very good group of four to outline what the Texas formula is. It's four solid righty hitters who also have a lot of power in their arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, almost all these guys had home runs.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Kimball's the only guy missing out on this list from a home run. So not only active hitting streaks, but, you know, going into the game with a home run, your last at bat probably isn't that bad, speaking for Jalen Flores specifically. But, I mean, Jalen Flores has just had a knack for hitting the ball at the right time. Yeah. Like, it's just – when we've needed the clutch hit, and that shows that he has the, like, it's hard to say this because, like, it's like he has everything that he's doing the hard stuff easy, right? But he's not doing the easy stuff hard. Like, he's walking up to the hard at bats with just a clear mind, deep breath, you know, calm and collected. And then he's walking up to that bats where he gets ahead in like a 2-1 count. And he ends up striking out or something like that, right?
Finds his way back down.
Yeah, but he still, every single time that you need that clutch at bat, you need the walk, you need the hit, Jalen Flores is coming through, and it's been something to see. But as right behind him, Rylan Galvan, same thing.
Yeah, and right now, heading into this game, who would you say is Texas's hottest, most on right now, or just overall best hitter going? Who do you think A&M should be the most scared of heading into Austin?
Okay, I think you gave me three different categories for potential answer, right? But yeah, I'll go with the last one. Rylan Galvan has to be the overall best hitter for the University of Texas this year. I mean, yeah. he fits some category for all those. Obviously, coming into the game with the 10-game hit streak, that's not too shabby. Pretty good, second best on this list, but to also be able to have the power to send the ball out of the park, and then he's leading the team in home runs, how could you not choose him?
And of course, with Max Palou out, people needed to step up here, here in Austin. And that's exactly what Galvan's done. Been the overall best hitter for the team. Schuessler, for me, has been probably the scariest guy for anyone to step up against recently, the last week or two. He's been destroying the baseball, and the power has really come up. His swing, his approach has been super calm, super
doesn't strike out.
Doesn't strike out at all.
Exactly. We'll see that in a second, but yeah.
Yeah, and on that topic, let's head over to the A&M graphics that we've got here, Connor. Nash has done a ton of great work with just some behind-the-scenes graphics, some really advanced stat work here, and this is just a line that shows how far your hitting has gone this season. The top of the line is your overall hits that you've made, and if you're above the line, it means you've stopped hitting at a better pace. You started well. Hayden Schott, for example, has those 26 hits. A lot of them came more in the middle of the season. He's kind of tampered off, whereas you see Bear Harrison, it took him a while, but then he had an explosion of at-bats, and Harrison stuff is someone I want to talk about. But who's a guy in this graph that you think really stands out in terms of, A, how many hits they've got, and B, also their progression of getting those hits this season?
I mean, man, they really just got to look at Caden Kent. Because that dash line that you're going to see, that's a linear progression of all the numbers. And you can see he really, like, when you start, you don't want to go horizontal on this graph. Like, that either, it doesn't matter what side you're on. If you're on the top or the bottom, you don't want to be on the horizontal side. If it looks like a bow on the top, I mean, that shows that, like you said, that they're kind of slumping, but, and that, like, currently slumping versus on the bottom. Like, so you look at Caden Kent, he was slumping. But now he's starting to figure out, and that kind of fits along the lines of when they were starting to come back and resurge into, being a top team in the nation, beating number one Tennessee on the road at Tennessee, beating number two Arkansas. That's all happening with the hot bat from Caden Kent. So
exactly,
that's going to be a very important bat for Texas to slow down.
Yeah, and you can see it's not as zoomed in, but about six games, he really started to flatten out. And you see he's not really adding hits to that portfolio. And then just in the last maybe 12 games, it's just gone so steep, up and up. And to finally hit that mark where he's at now, the 44 hits. I'm not exactly sure the numbers in the last 10 or 12, but it's been a lot of them as we've seen all the six multi-hit games. I think Terrence Keel is going to be a big part of this Aggie winning formula here. He's a really good athlete, a freshman, a kid from Georgia who just been a really solid bat for them. Nothing like super high tier for this offense, but he may be the guy batting leadoff. He's got the team leading hits. You can see how consistent that curve has been. A little bit of a slump kind of in that middle time for A&M, but yeah, 49 hits. He's a base stealing threat, really good athlete out there, and can play left, can play right, not going to play center, but he probably could for them. He's someone that I think you're going to have to look out for. Wasn't there last year. If you haven't seen any Aggie games, you wouldn't know anything about him, but going to be a real threat to be getting on base, getting on for stolen bases, and also a little bit of power, which it seems like everybody in this Aggie team's got that little bit of power that you should be scared of.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Terrence Keel, he's been amazing for them. You know, coming in as a freshman, he's been easily one of the most consistent, if not the most consistent. I mean, in my opinion, looking at this graph too, the only other person that's up for the conversation is Wyatt Hensler.
Yeah.
And it's not bad to have your most consistent guys also sitting there with your most hits. Does kind of, make a little bit more sense. You're like, okay, yeah, that's why. But you also want – one thing that stands out to me about Terrence Keel is you go back, he started the last Kentucky game. That's when he really started to get a shot at the, leadoff role.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't relinquished it since. And that is also right in when they, start to take off. So,
yeah.
The lineup that they have where you got Terrence Keel, Jace LaViolette, Wyatt Hensler, Caden Sorrell, Bear Harrison, then you go to Caden Kent, Benderup, Royo, and then whoever they got in left field between Farr and Jamal George.
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty much going to be their lineup.
There's no let up in that first six, at least when you're getting there. It's similar to what Texas was trying to build before maybe injuries and what have Jonah Williams being questionable this weekend. The one who we've kind of flirted with mentioning, but I really want to talk about is Bear Harrison, because stepping in for Jackson Appel, who was one of the best catchers in the country last year, a high draft pick, it felt like that would be a pretty obvious weakness in this A&M team. And he didn't even start the season as the main catcher, but Harrison, you can see how as soon as he got in, he just shot immediately, skyrocketed his hit totals, had a few three plus hit games. He's been one of their best hitters all year. I think his OPS comps plays around the 1280s or something like that. If you're getting that from behind the plate, it's similar to what Texas is getting with Galvan. It's absolutely a huge luxury to have. And he's, I believe, from St. Mary's. He was an all-freshman there in the WCC last season. And someone who's going to be a pain in the butt for Texas for a while if he can keep up these numbers, because he's been a real revelation for this team and sitting right in that five-hole slot. Super good bat there for the Aggies.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically, over the last month, he's taken over the catching position, like you mentioned. And he just really hasn't let go of it. I mean, there's not much. What name too? I love the Bear Harrison.
Yeah, Bear Harrison.
But I mean, I mean, it's just, it's going to be a tough lineup. I mean, Bear, when you got a guy like Bear who can not only hit the ball, but hit the ball for power, because this is also one of, like, when you look at pure, like, home run per hit numbers,
mm-hmm.
Bear's up there. He's up there in their hit. It's like, so he does have the home run power. It'll be one heck of a game to sit here and watch.
And I think the one name who does stick out a little bit when we've been talking, we haven't talked much about, is Hayden Schott. What's the story about him right now? Because you can see that he's starting to kind of go down on that curve. He's got probably the most egregious bottoming out of all these hitters right now. Had a good start to the year. He's been fine, but it hasn't been getting as much playing time with Sorrell coming back. He's more of a DH than anything. What do you think, he's going to be a big contributor this weekend, or is this maybe a bench bat that comes in for someone like George or Royal late in the game?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of like looking at, because I was going over, when I started to go over the lineups, I was like, man, crap, I might have should have put like George or Farr in there, because like he really, that lineup that I've talked about, how they've really kind of found their lineup and it hasn't changed over the last 11 games. He's only been in there once. And it's crazy to think that these are the names, like go back to like Gavin Cash, go to a Hayden Schott, right? Go to a Jacob Galloway. There were a lot of names that you were expecting to hear in the lineup consistently. And A&M is, you know, through some tough losses, they found that those guys probably aren't their optimal lineup. And man, it's just like you can really see the slump that he's been having. You never want to go horizontal on this graph. He just hasn't been hitting the ball well, and it's easy to see why they, you know, have hesitated to put him in the game.
Yeah, and as we go over to the Texas side of things,
I just also do want to mention, I mean, he has to be doing like pretty bad.
Yeah,
because
to lose that faith.
I haven't looked too far into Jamal George, but I can tell you right now, Sawyer Farr's version of this graph is not that good either. Like he's without a hit in his last like nine games or something.
The one thing is that this A&M lineup, when it gets that 8-9, if Schott's not in with Royo and Farr or George, it's high strikeout, low on base percentage, not the best hitters in the lineup. So you do get some let up there if Schott's not playing. So like you said, it must be something wrong. They might like George's defense more or whoever's going to be out in left field. But it is a little odd that you may not see a lot of Hayden Schott this weekend after all he's done for this A&M team. Connor, if you wouldn't mind putting up the Texas graphs, because we got some great ones here too. Of course, Jonah Williams only six hits on the season, but just a steep incline right from those that weekend there. But I think the big one that you want to point out at first is Adrian Rodriguez, because you're seeing how fast he got off to a great start this year, and he's been above that line for the entire year, and it's been going down a little bit. Injury, of course, hurts. You see that real horizontal line right near the end, maybe like 80% through his graph. So Rodriguez has been good, not great since he's gotten back from injury. Do you think this might be the weekend where he kind of puts it all together? He's much more healthy than he has been the last two.
Yeah, I mean, you saw the home run in the dish last weekend. I mean, he's like, the power's finally starting to return. He's hitting a couple balls into the deep into the outfield versus Texas State. And I think that hitting is one of those things, man, where I think it's honestly shows how much it's a testament to him even being in the lineup when he wasn't, you know, feeling 100%, because it's just like the what if, right? What if he does connect with the ball? What if he does get a good swing? Because he does have that potential. And You just, we talked about it earlier in the year, you just can't take a bat like his out of lineup. And man, you're starting to see him, you know, really get healthy. The power is starting to get back. So that confidence coming back, that's a huge thing. Because I mean, if I could have one attribute in a batter, it's confidence. I could care less if you could swing the bat fast, swing the bat hard. I don't care about any of that. If you're not confident at the plate, you're not going to hit the ball. It's just point blank. So it's nice to see him, you know, starting to feel a little more confident at the plate. We'll have to see how that works out with against Texas A&M, because pretty good pitching staff we got coming up.
Yeah, it's just a threat to even have him penciled into the lineup. And what's so good for this Texas team is that you're seeing that kind of linear progression line. Not really anyone who's been hovering above apart from him. It's a lot of guys like Schuster, Galvan, and really good ranges under that line, showing that they've at least recently really gotten an uptick in those hits. Mendoza and Flores have been super consistent all year. Farmer had some struggles early on, but has been great recently. And then Casey Borba, Will Gasparino, but both really good bats. I think Borba's is one that looks like a really fun one to talk about, because you're seeing that, you know, halfway through the year, he did struggle. And I do kind of remember those late before SEC play, early SEC play games, where it felt like his spot wasn't lost, but there were guys coming in to gun for what he was at, and it felt like he was maybe the ninth guy in the order. But now it feels like it's not the Texas Longhorns lineup without Casey Borba anchoring down that back half of the batting. And if he's going to be the 7 or 8 hitter in your lineup, man, are you not in just a fantastic spot for Texas and Austin here?
I mean, you look at – we got to the Borba home run versus Texas State.
Nuke.
Two runners. I mean, like, it's just – when Borba comes up to the plate, it's a very – unless it's a weird day where the top of our lineup isn't hitting and the bottom is, he's going to be sending out multiple, you know, base runners, sending them home. He's just – this is also a guy that has just a – we talk about Jalen Flores having like a clutch gene. Mm-hmm. Borba just has a knack for hitting the home run at the just the most clutch moments you could possibly ask for. Down 5 runs, you know, knock it back, or down 4 runs, knock it back to 1 run. Casey Borba's got you. Losing to Kansas, right? You don't want some Kansas memes on the timeline. Casey Borba's got you. little 2024 David Pierce reference. But,
that backup reference.
Yeah, I like you said, the second half of the season, it reminds me of almost like a water ski. Like you're on a jet ski. And you're just sitting there riding.
Pick yourself up.
Hopefully we're not on another jet ski, because that would mean he's about to go back down again. But hopefully he's catching a big wave right here.
Jet skis and Gamecocks, all in that one Nash Talks Texas rant. Texas also does have 2 hitters above 50 hits on the season, which is a great mark to be at this point in the year. Still a lot of baseball left to play. Kimball Schuessler's definitely been on a hot streak. You've seen a lot of those hits come in the last 10 games with how well he's been swinging the stick. But Ethan Mendoza, really just consistent. He's gotten in that leadoff spot, hasn't let it up. He's just been a strong hitter, it feels like, for Texas for the entire year. And you're maybe hoping he's stringing together more at-bats, getting on base more with the walks. But how are you feeling confidence-wise, just your own personal take about him as a leader?
Yeah, I mean, so really, you got Ethan Mendoza. He really, very similar to what we are talking about with Adrian Rodriguez. He's a guy that you just can't afford to take out of the lineup, and with his bat, he's a very clutch hitter. Even more so to his just presence on the base path. Like there's the term dirtbag. That's probably one of the biggest compliments that you can give a baseball player. And Ethan Mendoza, he's looking like, I mean, you got a ball that goes like what, 6 feet away from home plate. Ethan Mendoza's scoring on that pitch.
He's gone. He's in.
He's looking for every last little opportunity that he can to score, and he will take advantage of it if you let up. And that's one of the hard things about this Texas team is, like the Texas State game. This is that was the epitome of this Texas team. If you can go out there and you can play a great game, you can play 7 innings of good, great baseball that could beat the number one team in the nation. If you don't play 9 innings, you're screwed. Because you just, if you let up at that one moment, just lapse, this Texas team is going to jump on you, and they're going to jump on you fast. One of the great things about Adrian Rodriguez, like, kind of coming back is, right as we've lost Ethan Mendoza's ability to throw, you know, his arm is kind of hurt. Adrian Rodriguez kind of has been able to step up into that throwing role with, you know, his health coming back. So, ironically, great timing on this entrance and exit of the injuries.
Yeah, and right as Rodriguez is able to fill in, it's been a great ability for him to play second base while Mendoza needed to recover. We're going to hear from the Academy before we get into the last half of our analysis here of this A&M series.
Days like this, the anticipation's half the fun. The call to adventure. Possibilities in every direction.
Look at that.
The stories you'll bring back. Right. Even the true ones. And always, already, you can't wait until next time. From first catch to biggest catch of the season, this is where it starts. Academy Sports and Outdoors. Have fun out there.
And you know we love our advanced statistics here at Inside Texas. So, Connor, if you want to pull them up, we had some beautiful, beautiful numbers and graphics here that courtesy of Nash. And you're seeing a lot of numbers and percentages out here. Strikeouts are obviously one of the biggest things you want to avoid of the three true outcomes here in baseball. Man, does Caden Kent avoid them? Only 10.4%, better than anyone on either team by a good margin. And he's going to be faced with some real hurlers on this Texas staff. But his approach has been so great this season about just getting the ball in play every time. And that's probably the biggest stat that you're looking at here, apart from maybe, you know, Jace LaViolette and Brylan Galvan getting on 22.5 and higher percent of the time on bases on balls. For you, what sticks out the most on this graphic on the hitting side of things?
I mean, man, really, if you could go beyond just the top five, and it was hard to put more than the top five. I just easier to make it visually appealing.
Yeah.
The Longhorns really start to fill up some of these graphics out here. But just overall, man, the inability for Caden Kent and Wyatt Hensler to get struck out, like, these dudes are playing some really good baseball, and it's really hard to get them struck out. But at the same time, it's not like they're walking. So they're hitting the ball. They're putting the bat on the ball often. So it's not a situation where they're being really critical of pitches and they're getting pitched bad pitches. They're just taking advantage of great pitches. They're being the best. But the other one that stands out to me is the batting average when we bat the ball in play. When we get the bat on the ball, I mean, Jonah Williams is going to be really inflated because he's only played seven games.
Yeah, right? Example, right.
But still, you look at like a Tommy Farmer who leads a team still in line drive percent. And he's right there with Jonah Williams. So maybe Jonah Williams might regress a little bit more to the mean, but that mean may not be too far away from 6.67. I mean, Tommy Farmer, it really is kind of ironic looking at that and like looking at the line drives and looking at this, because if you were to just poll Texas fans, maybe 1,000 Texas fans, and say, hey, I want you to order 1 through 9 best hitters on the roster, Tommy Farmer's probably in like
700
of those answers is 7 to 8, 7, 8, 9. And I mean, what we're seeing in the advanced stats, man, he's probably one of the best hitters for Texas. But so to have that, and you know, Jim Schlossing was talked about this, how he wants his 9-hole to almost be like a leadoff hitter.
Yep.
Man, to have a guy like Tommy Farmer and Jonah Williams in the 8 and 9 hole, those are some legit speed guys that can hit some line drives.
Yeah, and that BABIP stat, as the more colloquial phrase of it is when you're getting in contact with the ball, how effective are you? And Farmer, it's not just that he's getting on base. He stretches doubles. He's hitting in the gaps a lot. Like you said, the line drives. The strikeouts have been a problem for a few of the Longhorns, and you know, you don't see him on that strikeout percentage list because him and Borba are probably pretty high up on the percentage-wise. But like you said, the approach with Farmer is if you can get contact and get the ball out there, you're fast enough to beat out even weak grounders to the left side, and he's hitting the ball so well into the outfield that it's just been such a revelation to have him be a good hitter this year. And it feels like he's not quite hit where he could be, and what he's not had that signature series of, hey, where did this 8-hole hitter come from, and why is he suddenly Texas' best hitter now? And I think you're going to get that with Farmer eventually. Maybe it's this weekend. Maybe it's sometime soon. I think on the Aggie side of things, Terrence Keel also being a diamond in the rough there for them on the BABIP side, because he's also a speed guy. I've already talked extensively about him, but 417 is not something to scoff about. He's, you know, with Williams being kind of an outlier, he's right there with Farmer, above Mendoza and above Galvan. Pretty great stat from him. And then, you know, Kane Sorrell, Bear Harrison, Jace Laviolette. That's the hard part about this 2-5 order. They're going to walk so much. They're just going to take their free bases. And Texas isn't known to walk batters recently, maybe hit by pitches, but that's just going to be a really tough part of the order to get through, because it's guys like Hensler who aren't going to strike out, guys like Kent at the back end who are going to keep the ball in play. And then also Laviolette steps up and you're either walking him or he's in the home run, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what's happening is you got your guys like the Kent and Hensler, they're going to get on base. Laviolette, Sorrell, Harrison, they're going to bring him in. It's just
old school ball.
I was trying to go with a miracle reference, but that I'm messing up on the Conehead reference. But going back to Tommy Farmer, man, I mean, the problem for him is he's striking out 29.3% of the time. So
yeah,
he's just got to cut down the strikeouts.
And that's something that maybe comes with more experience, having another year in Austin for next season. But I think when he's not facing the best whiff pitchers, which I think that's why we get transition over to a thing we've not neglected a little bit, is to talk about this A&M pitching staff, because, you know, Ryan Prager comes into this season as one of the best pitchers in the country. He's seen as a potential first, second round pick in the draft, big power lefty, and himself and Lampkin and whoever else, maybe Patton coming out on Sundays. It's just been bad, really. The ERA numbers at least have been pretty gaudy and in the sevens for a lot of them. His last start, Prager's, was four runs in four innings against Arkansas. But it sounds like everyone's confident about this guy, and that early when he was talking about him, he's right there. He's where they need to be at. It almost feels like for Texas, this is going to be the series where he turns it up, right? Like, is Ryan Prager going to be the Ryan Prager we know this Friday, or is there still something that you might think is holding him back from keeping that ERA lower?
I mean, it really has been kind of weird looking at, because they have a good pitching staff, you know that, right? But the ERA has really kind of started to inflate, and it's also not the opponents haven't been scoring out of, you know, abnormally from what they were earlier in the season. It's not like the opponents are, it hasn't followed their hitting. We talked about earlier in the week, their hitting has doubled what they were before.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I mean, it's just because here's the other thing. It's not like there's errors being made out in the field. Like, these are earned runs that are crossing the plate. So I don't know. It's going to be hard to watch. If he does return to form as a Texas fan, right, you know, because obviously you don't want a stud guy like that. But if we're able to somehow get a bad Ryan Prager series when we're down Jared Spencer, that's going to feel like found money.
Yeah, and that feels like the win, a really good win condition is taking that Friday game when you don't have your Friday starter in. As we haven't really mentioned it today, but Jared Spencer will be out for the season with a shoulder injury. Got diagnosed, went to Houston, got his x-rays, saw what's going on, and his family felt like it was best for him not to continue the season. So huge loss for the Longhorns up there. You know, they've already lost their best hitter for at least the regular season. Now your best Friday guy is gone, but at least Dylan Volanta still exists, right, Nash? You can see him lighting up this sheet with the strikeouts. Moffitt hasn't pitched enough fully to really have too much. These stats matter a lot. He's great, great 3-2 outcome pitcher, Moffitt is, but Volantis, 36.5% strikeout percentage, 105 ERA as a reliever. Just an unbelievable pitcher, and I would say he's the best pitcher in the series by a good margin, or at least, you know, Max Grubbs is right on his tail, but Volantis just is going to be such an X factor down the stretch here for Texas.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan Volantis, there's honestly not much more you can really say about him. Aiden Moffitt has looked incredible in the short time that we've gotten to see him, especially lately. Like, that's the other thing. He's not coming in and just, like, bum series. He's actually coming in legit SEC series. And this is a guy that we're going to trust. We knew we were going to have to trust on with his SEC prior 6-year experience. The one thing that stands out to me is in the ERA, it can't go below 5, but 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Those are also all Longhorns.
That would have been
so my guess. Longhorns are filling up 8 of the top 10 ERA spots. And then it's like, Now, Jared Spencer is also out of that, so technically you could go 3 of 7 of 10. But Thomas Burns, Cade Bing, Luke Harrison, these guys all being under 3 ERA is amazing. Jason Flores, he's looking like a legit potential starter for Texas. And then you also go to, like, Thomas Burns again, like 31.6 strikeout percentage, 2.63 ERA. And he's been able to, like, actually get into some deep pitch count or deep pitches. That'll play in a starting slot, potentially.
And on the A&M side of things, you know, Shane Stow's out for the year. He had Evan Ashenbeck. He graduated. So it's been Prager, Lampkin, kind of that big righty returner, and then the Long Beach State transfer Patton out on Sundays. But it feels like the guy who they've been relying on to do a lot of the dirty work and a huge load of their innings pitches, Weston Moss out of the bullpen. He's probably been their best just overall pitcher. You're seeing that 1.7 ERA. That's coming in a lot more innings than Gavin Lyons, who I do think we're going to see the freshman Lyons this weekend. He's been their Tuesday guy, but they're going to throw out everything they can, as should Texas in a series like this. But Moss has been getting you 4 innings every time he's coming in of a really high-level 1.7 ERA baseball. And that's one of the most important parts of this Texas A&M team is the offense is good enough to generate you 9 runs a game. If Moss on Friday and Sunday can give you what Texas has been getting from Volantis, they're a tough team to beat, and that's been the formula for them recently. I've said the word formula so much today, but what makes Moss so good, and why has this been such a breakout season for him?
I mean, he's just a really good baseball player. One thing that goes to the show about how kind of much he's been relied on is he's third on their team in appearances. Mm-hmm. He's got 15 appearances on the year, and he's also got 37 innings pitched. So he's not just coming in to handle a batter or two, right? He's, like, actually getting some legit innings, and he's getting innings that matter. Now, he doesn't have any save. He only has 1 save on the season and only 2 games started. But this is a guy that if they're in a jam, they're going to call on Weston Moss to come out of the bullpen and try and slow it. He reminds me a lot of Max Grubbs for the role that we have him on this team.
Yeah, and Grubbs has always been a great pitcher for Texas. Bing, Flores, you're going to see a lot of them this weekend. Bing got his rest on Tuesday. I think that's going to wrap it up from us here, Nash. Great episode as always. Weird to be doing it on a Friday morning, but always love coming on and talking ball with you. We're running up past that 40-minute mark, so I'm not sure I can give you any last words, but I hope to see as many of y'all here today at 3 p.m. at the tailgate. Inside Texas is giving away some awesome, awesome stuff. That Yeti coolers, the Blackstone Grill, which I would love the most. I can't enter. The 32 hard cooler, the flag canopy, Texas folding chairs, and those tumblers. Like I said, it's going to be behind the center field, kind of near the tennis courts, closer to Kamal Street. You're not going to be able to miss it. Big Inside Texas banner is going to be showing. You're going to see a lot of guys there. But of course, with this tailgate giveaway, no purchase necessary. Just 1 entry per person. Must be 18 years old or older, and you must be present to claim your prize. I can't wait to see who's going to grab that. And as always,
I might have to save the stash so I can get the entry in, man.
Not Nash Talks Texas right there. And thank you, as always, to Connor. Don't forget, $1 for 4 months here at Inside Texas for the spring practice sale. Just the best you're going to get in all of college sports. I've been Evan Veith. Nash has been right here alongside me this whole time. We cannot wait to meet so many of y'all today and see one of the most insane series of college baseball you're going to see all year. Thank y'all so much for watching. We'll see you.
Okay.